He is the author, investigative news reporter, expert. They don't cover the news. They uncover the truth. That almost sounds like a slogan, Russ, we had a long time ago. WhoWhatWhy.org. Russ Baker joins us on the Jack Blood Show. How are you, Russ?
Doing fabulous. Thank you very much.
Very good. And thank you for being with us for the second hour of the broadcast today. A couple of things I want to talk about with you. One is some updates on the Boston Bomber, on the Jokhar Sarnoff and what his fate and future might be. And you are the number one guy who sat and took the minutes, and you guys went to all the days of the trial, and you've investigated this thing top to bottom. So not too many people more up to date on this than you, and there's some newer stuff I want to share with you. And the other thing is you wrote one of the definitive Bush books. And that's obviously got to be selling again, right? With Jeb Bush, PNAC Jeb Bush.
There is some interest.
Family of Secrets, The Bush Dynasty, America's Invisible Government, and the Hidden History of the Last 50 Years. It's got to be amazing. You, like me, we didn't expect, when they said George Bush Jr. was running for president here years ago, Russ, did you expect he'd win? I was pretty stupid back then. I would go, no way that's going to happen, and there it is. I mean, you would think there's no way Jeb Bush would win an election and be president, but then again, I've been wrong before about that.
Right, and then we've got Jeb's son now in statewide office himself.
He is the land commissioner in Texas, little George P. Bush. And didn't he have a major, what kind of a drug problem did he have? Was it cocaine, the family drug, or was it something worse than that when he went down? Do you remember?
Well, I'm not an expert on that, but certainly he and one of his siblings have had a number of problems with the law, shall we say.
If it's Florida, it had to have been crank and pharmaceuticals, right?
Yeah, or sniffing too much suntan lotion.
Oh, man. I hope land commissioner in Texas. What a nice, cushy position that is, right? That's really going to help the family out. What are your thoughts on this, the P.T. Barnum of our age? Donald Trump, he's on the news 24 hours a day. I saw this nice, cushy interview he did with Andrew Cuomo on CIANN the other day, Russ. And I got to tell you, he there's a sucker born every minute. I'm not one.
I like a lot of people share the enjoyment of Trump. I met him during his period where, I don't know if you know this, he wouldn't shake hands with people because he thought you could get AIDS from it. He's an interesting fellow. You know, he really is he's a life force. He has such an exuberance about his complete lack of any sort of moral compass. And it's sort of almost pleasurable. It's kind of like going to the movies and watching, a villain in a James Bond movie or something. The sheer delight, just rubbing his hands together and what can he do next? And then just seeing how befitting it is of our current political situation that he should do as well as he does. Really, I think what's missing from the analysis is people say, well, people want straight talk, or he's tying in to their anger. No, I mean, I don't really think what it is. That's what it is. It's that we're so adrift from our moorings as a society that we sort of have given up on so many things. We don't pay attention anymore. The general quality of the candidates is so poor. Almost none of them really have any ideas or plan or track record of doing anything remarkable or of being builders or visionaries of any kind. And so into that mess comes this extremely entertaining, cockily self-confident individual, and it does liven it up. It does make it fun. Of course, at some point of amusement may turn to terror. So it'll be interesting to see what happens in the next few months.
Well, yeah, I mean, in politics, you don't want to peak too early, and we are a long way away from any kind of primaries or fixed caucuses and all the things that we've seen with the it's Ron Paul's birthday today, and I know you like him a little bit, not too much, but it's his 80th birthday today, and he got hosed so bad in that last election and wouldn't even stand up to the masters and got on the Mitt Romney That's why a lot of people are pissed, Russ. Got on the Mitt Romney bandwagon there. They made some deal so Randy could be a senator and then run for president in 2016. It's all very kind of ugly and nasty. I hate to say that on the old man's birthday because I love the old man. But you know, we saw what lengths the Republican Party would go to make sure their establishment candidate is picked. They'll burn the freaking house down with all the delegates in it if they have to. They don't care.
It's definitely a long game, and I think it's way early for anybody to write Jeb Bush off because of the fact that he's not performing all that well. You know, given how fairly dull he is, it's sort of amazing that he's doing as well as he is, I would say. You know, he's in for the long haul. They've got the resources. One assumes they will not deplete those and will continue adding to the war chest and just wait it all out. And absolutely, you're right. I mean, I cannot see how Trump sustains for the next half year until.
Well, all he has to do, it's like Deflategate with the Patriots. All they have to do is sustain through the off season. And then the actual game will begin. And then, listen, I have to thank Russ Baker with us, whowhatwhy.org, and .com and .net, I'm sure. Russ, I have to think the Kardashians are going, you know, we have $1 billion and we're famous reality stars. Why don't we all run for president? I mean, look what's happening here. We will totally suck all the oxygen out of the news and all the other candidates that would, I guess they could run as Democrats, right?
Well, that's where this country is headed, is that it's going to be a requirement that if you want to be a presidential candidate, you have to have a reality show.
Man, I just threw up a little bit. I'm sorry. Nurse, over here at the microphone. I need a towel right now. It's horrible.
Well, it is pretty ridiculous. And, you know, I guess this country's always been in love with celebrity, but it's probably worse now than ever before. It's kind of a, you know, and by the way, this whole thing, the kind of love of celebrity is related to the love of known brands, familiar brands, what people are talking about, and the buzz, you know, this sort of garbage in, garbage out cycle that dominates so much of our lives, and I'm very, very sensitive to it because of the fact that I started Who, What, Why as an antidote to the mainstream journalism. I hate that term. You know, some people call it the lamestream journalism, but whatever you call it. I was so frustrated by the fact. See, what happens is that as I do public speaking, which I do, or meet with small groups, or travel, talk to folks, invariably what I notice is that most of us, many of us, let's say, when we meet a new person, we immediately want that person to establish for us their bona fides. We want to know something about them that will tell us that they're important and we need to listen to them. But the amazing thing is we actually, and I live in New York City where you've got the most elite attitude people in the country, here that's not even good enough. You know, everybody went to, you know, a quote-unquote good school. Everybody invented something or is from a family or had high scores or is creative or whatever, and so it doesn't mean anything. And so when you meet people, and even if they ask you what you do, there's really no reaction. And typically, of course, what people will do is if you say you're a doctor, then they say, you know what really bugs me? And then they launch into this whole thing in their critique of medicine, having no interest whatsoever in really acknowledging that the person they're talking to has spent a fair amount of time in the field and has some informed thoughts of their own, which one might want to hear. Yeah. You know, and so that's a real problem. And then, I'm sorry to be going off on this tangent.
Though. I live in New York and Boston and Providence. I know this whole mentality of which you speak.
You know, and then what happens is if you say, let's say you're a journalist and what do you do? And, you know, even if you say you have a book, Family of Secrets is a bestseller, but it was blocked by the conventional media. They were, as they told me repeatedly in private, they were afraid of the revelations in there. It was so sort of shocking and so a big picture different than what they had been hearing about American history about the Bush dynasty, about political power structures in this country, and they just didn't know. It was too much cognitive dissonance. They didn't know how to deal with it, and so they just ignored it. Now, I just went on our Amazon page. I go every few weeks to take a look, and you see, like, you know, this book's been out for 5 years. Here's a review from 4 days ago, reader review, 5 stars, wow. The one right below it, 4 stars, lets you see what the Bushes are all about. 6 days ago, 9 days ago, another one, interesting and important book, 13 days ago. So, you know, the public, certain members of the public go out and seek their own information. And they know, don't just read the books that are on the big TV shows. Don't just read the books that the New York Times tells you to read. Look for other things, because more often than not, it's the other things that are going to give you that unique perspective that the establishment doesn't want you to get. And yet, as I hang out in places like New York City, Martha's Vineyard, you know, again, where you have sort of elites and intellectuals, they tend to have fairly narrow thinking, sort of bizarrely and improbably. I mean, you would think that a true intellectual would be somebody
who
would...
No, they're pseudo-intellectuals, that's why.
Well, that's right. A real intellectual, I'll tell you who a real intellectual is. A real intellectual is people I've met who, a guy who does farming and works for a railroad and struggles to get by. Another guy I know who parks cars for a living. Somebody I know who drives a truck. You know, these people, and I'm not saying that's true of everybody in those fields by any means, but these are people who, you know, that because they're not part of these circles, they don't go to the dinner parties, they don't hear everybody talking about what they're reading, and therefore they don't all feel obligated to read those exact same things so that they can participate in the conversation. Many of these people, you know, they live in rural areas, or they spend a lot of time on their own. And so they're curious, and they're thinking, and their mind is raging widely, and they're wondering about why things are the way they are, and they look for, you know, unusual treatises and radio shows, that podcasts that offer a different perspective. And this really is the hope for the future, the hope for the country, is those people who think outside the box.
Right, the people of which you have completely, you know, broad-brushed. But it's true, because I know all these super over-educated children of the elite myself. Perfectly captured by F. Scott Fitzgerald. Go that, if you want to know what the elites do and how they think and what how they talk about nothing all the time, that would be a good op. And all you had to do, Russ Baker, was put killing in front of your book, Family of Secrets, The Bush Dynasty, America's Invisible Government, and they just put killing in front of that, and then you would have a... Because, look, I got to tell my listeners something. These, just like the top 40 list or who's getting a gold record or whatever, just the same way, they do it with books. The publishers and the people and the corporations that are selling the books, they make massive buys themselves of the books, and then they make sure that's registered in the New York Times bestseller list. It doesn't mean 50,000 people bought the book, right? It's totally fixed, isn't it?
Who knows? I mean,
you could. That's not a conspiracy. That's the truth. You could admit to that, right?
O'Reilly has a garage
full of his books.
I'm not an expert, but I will say this: the author of all those books called Killing, you know, his next one will be Killing Millard Fillmore, and then the final one will be called Killing O'Reilly.
I wrote that book, and I call him O'Reilly. We'll have to publish that ourselves.
By the way, this is a guy, you know, as you know, Family of Secrets has 5 chapters of largely new material related to the Kennedy assassination, answering that odd question, why does George H.W. Bush not remember where he was the day Kennedy was shot? And in the course of my going out on this tremendous tangent of researching the Kennedy assassination when I was trying to do a book on the Bushes and becoming deeply fascinated with it and becoming fascinated, among other things, with Bill O'Reilly's early reporting as a reporter, where, I mean, he did some pretty good stuff, and he really saw that there was more to the story, and he realized that there was a cover-up, that powerful people were interested in ensuring that the truth did not come out. And he did a number of reports on it. In fact, at our website, whowhatwhy.org, you could actually type in his name in the search box, and we've got some video of him decades ago with a story of some significance.
Yeah, no,
where
that's
he's
true.
Pointing out CIA role and so on. But ironically, he has dropped all that. He's completely changed his position. And now, really, what all he does is he makes up stories, as you know. He just literally, now he claimed, you know, he claimed that he was present when a particular man killed himself or was suicided. And, of course, he was the man that happened in Florida, and he was in Texas at the time. Yeah. So these are the people who dominate our discourse. And this is why we can't fix anything, because of whether it's an O'Reilly or a Donald Trump or the so-called liberal establishment.
Yeah, but he was totally – he's like Donald Trump or Ronald Reagan or any of these Hollywood people. I guess if you want to broad brush them – okay, I once lived in Hollywood too. They're going with the flow. So they were very establishment liberal, and then they became very there's almost no difference, right? Establishment conservative. You know what? Today is the anniversary of Nelson Rockefeller, Russ Baker, being promoted to vice president. And I always love that line in the Oliver Stone film Nixon, which Anthony Hopkins does an amazing job playing Nixon in that movie. Have you seen that?
Yes.
Go see it if you haven't, folks. Go see it. And at one point in it, they go, they have a cocktail party, and Nixon goes up to Kissinger, and Kissinger says, "What good is democracy if a Rockefeller can't be president?" But this was also in the movie. Let me can I play this 1 minute clip? This is
Johnson.
This is Nixon being pressed to run for president.
I don't think you know how much people hate Kennedy down here. Hell, he's coming to town tomorrow, and I guarantee you they will run his ass out of town on a rail.
Damn right.
Now, we are willing to give you a shit pot full of money to get rid of him. More than you ever dreamed of.
Nobody's going to beat Kennedy in 64 with all the money in the world.
Suppose Kennedy don't run in 64.
Not a chance. Well, gentlemen, I promised my wife I,
And the look he gives him is, okay, that's the date, that's November 21st, that conversation supposedly happened. Nixon, they're going, you run for president, and he goes, I'm not running against Kennedy in 64, and they go, well, what if he doesn't run? And, I think the rest kind of speaks for itself, doesn't it? Hey, that's interesting, too, is that Roger Stone, I didn't even know that he was the top campaign advisor for Trump, Russ, and apparently I found out when he was sent packing or quit or one of those things, and I saw him shilling for Trump again today on cable news. And I thought it was really interesting that Roger Stone, he's, you know, of course, Nixon's greatest biographer and the greatest friend, and he also was an advisor to the Reagan administration, but he's also a conspiracy guy, JFK conspiracy guy that has concluded and come out with a book, and we had him on our show to talk about it, that LBJ had... and JFK killed, and that was Trump's the ringleader over there, a political analyst, and they never mention that when he comes on. That's interesting.
It is interesting. Roger is a complicated guy. I have enjoyed a few meals with him and some good stories back and forth. He keeps telling me how much he likes Family of Secrets and the work that we do at Who, What, Why. So, listen, stranger bedfellows, but there you go, you know. There is a growing body of people all over the so-called political spectrum who have informed themselves and can see that there is simply no way that the Warren Commission story makes any sense at all. And, you know, he's one of those. There are any number of people, Republicans, conservatives, libertarians, who have come to accept it. The people who will not hear of this are that same group you were talking about. It's the sort of elite liberals. It's the kind of establishment liberals. And of course, you know, those are the people who surrounded Kennedy and then Johnson, the sort of elder statesman, were the Democratic version of the Republican advisors for Eisenhower. And you know, you were talking about how there's not that much of a difference in many ways, and you see it in the form of these firms like Brown Brothers Harriman, which I wrote about extensively in Family of Secrets. Brown Brothers Harriman, the investment banking firm of which Prescott Bush was a partner. And they had their key people as top advisors to every single president of the United States, and I mean every one, for a good half century, and it didn't matter if it was a Democrat or a Republican. And so what you see is this bifurcation, which in the end only sort of reinforces the same hierarchies in this country. Now, I will say I think that those people genuinely, you know, Democratic elites and Republican elites see themselves as enemies and disagree on a bunch of things. But in the end, they are all part of the system, and it's in their interests to preserve it.
Oh, and I don't see too many cracks in it other than, look, I mean, we had, you know, major financial problems around the world, but that's just a way to steal money from the rest of us because they always end up being okay. And you're right, man. Pamela Harriman, by the way, it should be worth noting, the Harrimans and the Bushes totally in bed together, all skull and bones, and you can put them behind everything. In fact, when Union Bank funded the Nazis during the war, not just before the war with Prescott Bush, it was Harriman that did it. Brown Brothers Harriman, it should be noted, as I know you know, Russ, maybe my listeners don't, became Halliburton later on down the road. But Pamela Harriman was funding the Clintons, right? I mean, like Penny Pritzker is the goddess of all things Democrat.
Sorry, I just want to correct something. Brown Brothers Harriman, not related to Halliburton, although I know why you think that. There are ties. Halliburton became part of Brown and Root
became.
And there are all these threads between all these outfits. I won't go into here, but if anybody wants to know, Family of Secrets, who, why, we got a lot of that stuff in there. Absolutely. These Democrats and these Republican operatives and socialites and hostesses and what have you, that it is all in many ways a great delightful thing. And you know where you see it best when you watch things like Charlie Rose and even Jon Stewart, and you'll see that these ostensible liberals create a platform regularly for the icons of the Republican establishment. Now, they'll say they do it because these are people that people want to hear from, but, you know, they don't have any shortage of platforms, and yet they're all striving to have them on there. It's much harder for a left progressive liberal to get an airing on those supposed left liberal shows than it is for these establishment people, including icons of the right.
Wow. By the way, I meant to say this about 20 minutes ago. Russ Baker is with us from Who, What, Why. Who, What, Why. His Bush book is really important as we're about to have another. I want to stop it. I predicted it years ago. Bush and Clinton would get and buy and be promised these nominations. I want to be wrong. I want the people to rise up. But we shouldn't just look at as far as nepotism goes, Russ, we shouldn't just look at Bush's and Clinton's, because Trump, what did he get, $200 million from his dad in this massive New York financial empire? I got to tell you, what is Rand Paul but a product of nepotism? And nepotism ran very deep into the Paul campaigns, industries, and various political action committees. I think, are we sick of this? I mean, we call it bloodlines on this show. I know it's a little funky, but it is nepotism. Are we done with this? Apparently not.
We're not. And you do notice that a few of the Republican candidates, Rubio, Cruz, and so on, try to talk about their struggles and the dysfunctional family situation and so on. And I mean, I suppose that's healthy, although it doesn't necessarily make them any better. But, you know, that is a useful discussion. A guy like Bernie Sanders, very much sort of quote-unquote self-made, if you want to say, and probably has very few assets. So, you know, that is a conversation we ought to have. We really ought to talk about that.
Amen.
And how much,
yeah.
I would say, I would love to see a debate between Bernie Sanders, you know, Ted Cruz. We ran an article you might have seen on Who, What, Why about that, saying, well, wouldn't it be interesting to have a debate between a Bernie Sanders and a Ted Cruz? You know, two guys who don't, were not to the manor born, who are not, you know, riding on some kind of family resources or reputation, and who have radically different views on almost everything. I mean, it would be interesting to actually have a meaningful debate.
I was scared to ask you about Bernie Sanders, but I got to tell you two things. One is, you know, people, his constituents asked him in Vermont about the Palestinians, and he just about blew a gasket and had everybody arrested. I thought that was a little ugly. And the fact that they take in, he and his wife take in, we did this whole analysis on how much taxes they pay. They took in $46,000 in Social Security benefits alone. And then he also gets paid from being the mayor of Burlington, Vermont, like from 30 years ago. He gets a pension. I mean, they only pay $27,000 jointly in taxes. They took in more in Social Security. I'd just be curious to what you think. If you're making $200,000 a year, forget all your assets and whatever wealth you've accumulated. I don't know what that is. Should you be taking, I mean, just be cool and donate your Social Security money to the people? I mean, should you be taking that money?
You know, I mean, that's an interesting issue, as is the question of if the system is set up in a certain way, should you lead by example, or, and of course this is all subjective, or, you know, another, put it another way, should you deprive yourself of your legal benefits of a system that you may not entirely agree with? And of course, I suppose the Koch brothers could say that, because they are quite hypocritical on their attitude toward government, because they actually are constantly seeking government gains and government action and subsidies that benefit them. So, you know, yes, I suppose we can look at Sanders on that stuff. I suppose we can look at everybody probably should have the same standard. But then I always say I like to do unto others thing. I mean, I think that if I were entitled to some pension and anything else, and it was legal, I certainly would take it.
No, so, but not if you, were doing very well, right? And he's got a senatorial pension; he'll never have to worry.
Well, he's not rich, though. I mean, I do understand.
Well, no, he's not rich, but he's
rich
well
people
off.
People take $1 a year for a job, you know.
Oh man, you know, and I'm not going to argue with anyone, and you're all welcome to your opinion. But I'll tell you what: if I'm making $200,000 a year, right? There's no way I'm taking a even though I deserve it, I paid into it. I don't put anyone down who takes it. It's not an entitlement. That's something you earned and you paid for, and I'm down with that. But if you're making upper middle class money, I guess we'll call it, you don't have to take it. You can take it the next year. I remember the boxer. There's a famous boxer, and back in the day, he took relief money. They call it welfare now. Relief, maybe you know what I'm talking about. Russell Crowe played him in a movie. It's just it's escaping me. It's an actual real story. And he took his relief money, and he took it for about a half a year to get his family fed. I mean, literally, they were teetering on a brink of poverty that we today don't even understand, Russ. And when he made the money, he went and brought it back to him, and he said, "Here's the money back. Thanks for helping me out." I mean, wouldn't we all be better off if that's how we were doing it? I don't know, man.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Although I have to say, living in New York City, that depending on where you live, $200,000 people scoff at and don't even consider practically middle class, you know.
But not Vermont, so. And he's also getting senator benefits up the yin yang.
All right.
Russ Baker, right. Listen, dude, he ain't going to be the nominee anyway, so sometimes I wonder why we're talking about it.
I think we got bigger fish to fry than
We'll do that. I want to let's take a quick break, and I want to come back with you, Russ Baker, whowhatwhy.com. We got you for about another 20 minutes on the broadcast. I want to just get you some updates on the Boston bombing trial. There's all kinds of interesting new things that have been happening that I think are definitely worth talking about, and then we'll kill the show at that point and go for the third hour of pure music and history. It's the Jack Blood Show. I'm so glad you guys are here today. We got a bunch of guys from Turkey here today.
Read my lips.
I didn't inhale.
Whatever.
I inhaled frequently.
Is our children learning?
Everywhere, like such as and.
Whatever.
Children do learn.
It depends upon what the meaning of the word is.
Yes. Whatever.
My United States of whatever,
America.
And this is my United States of whatever.
You're working hard to put food on your family.
And this is my United States of whatever.
That flag represents rule of law and due process. And that's why we're going to close Guantanamo and restore habeas corpus.
Whatever.
I'll make our government open and transparent.
I did not have
sexual relations with that woman? Not a single time. Never. These allegations are false. And I need to go back to work for the American people.
I welcome this kind of examination because people have got to know I'm not a crook.
Yeah, whatever.
You will not see your taxes increase one single dime. I repeat, not one single dime.
Allegedly.
Because this is my United States or whatever.
I believe in the Constitution, and I will obey the Constitution of the United States. We're not going to use signing statements as a way of doing an end run around Congress.
See, in my line of work, you got to keep repeating things over and over and over again for the truth to sink in, to kind of catapult the propaganda.
You just got to say things over and over again to try to catapult the propaganda. You literally said that, Russ Baker, broadcast with us today. I missed George Bush. See, Jeb is much more measured. I'm afraid he won't just put his foot in his ass or his mouth, ass and mouth disease, as George W. did. George W. kind of didn't care enough to really do the homework, so anything could come out of his mouth. Pun intended. No subway jokes. It was great fun, and I guess that's why people like Donald Trump. Russ Baker is with us in the broadcast, and we never know what he's going to say.
Yeah, I mean, George W. was a charming fellow in his own way, and always a good for a laugh and some amusement, and even as enormously frustrating as he and his policies were, people liked him personally. And the brother just, you know, he just does not have it. I mean, is there an ounce of humor or
no charisma,
self-awareness or anything there? I mean, it doesn't look like it.
No charisma. And a lot of people don't know this about Bush, because when you saw him out on the campaign trail, if he was out in Iowa or something, he really got down with the people. He was actually a pretty good dude. And when they said you could have a beer with George W. Bush, they weren't kidding. He was a good, entertaining dude, and he could really relate with the people. And I think he got his dad elected, him being part of that, and he got the fundamentalist Christians involved. The rest, as they say, is history. But Jeb isn't that guy. But he doesn't have to be the guy. He's already got the nomination. They got the money. That's the main thing. That's what happens. Another Russ, one of our listeners, wants me to ask you this question. Russ Baker from whowhatwhy.org with us. If you think the candidates, and he's saying mostly Republican, are running for the nomination just to get the money. In other words, they know there's no chance in hell that they're going to win. Are they just trying to get the campaign money? If we follow the campaign money, if you do it right, that can spin itself off into foundations. You know, I mean, there's a lot of things you can do with that. Plus, you can come back next time.
Yeah, I mean, I think that this particular year, things are so zany that it is actually possible that almost anything could happen, up to a point. I think that if somebody who was identified as dangerous to the establishment was too far ahead, something might happen to them. But I do think that a lot of these people see, hey, you never know. And, you know, even some of them that maybe are a little more nuanced and not as flashy, figure some of the flashier ones will drop by the wayside. So I think there's that element. Although I do agree with your caller or whatever correspondent that that there are other benefits to being a presidential candidate. For one thing, you become a bigger brand. And when you're a bigger brand, there are all sorts of possibilities. I mean, if, look at a guy like Mike Huckabee. I mean, he kind of became a stock figure. I mean, I can't say for sure, but I wouldn't be surprised if he could have gone on to, you know, Saturday Night Live or Jon Stewart or anything for some years after that because of his new, let's call it, stature. Now, the other thing is the money angle, and I do agree that there are all kinds of financial opportunities that come out of being a candidate. For one thing, you meet all of these well-heeled people, and you start interacting with them. And if they, particularly if they give you money, and they started, let's say, investing in you, that they have a long-term sense of relationship and a sense of fact that they like you, or that you will do listen to them or do what they want. And there's no question that that plays a role, and there's no question that can be translated into all kinds of tangible opportunities on boards, public speaking fees, and what have you.
No, I mean that the books, the public speaking fees actually really start adding up seriously when you are a major, well-known candidate, and I know that can happen. I'm thinking more in terms of what Pat Buchanan did to the Reform Party, that he allegedly stole, some would say inherited, from Ross Perot's people. And I've had two FCC complaints, Russ, in my life, and one of them was from the Reform Party when I was talking about how they couldn't nominate a candidate because Pat Buchanan ran away with all the money. And that messed everybody up. I mean, I know people don't like me saying that, but it's the truth.
Yeah, well, I'll take your word for it. I don't know that particular case.
All right. Last thing on the Bushes, and we could do if we do any more shows ever again, we could do a whole show on this. What is the significance of Jeb Bush being the only one running for president that signed on to the Project for a New American Century? Any? Is that important? Because it is to me.
Well, let me say, first of all, that I think that if the other candidates had been around, if they had been consulted or invited, I think they would probably sign up.
But they weren't consulted.
Barely even knowing what it was. No, I mean, look, I'm not saying that they're all in that camp, which is a fairly broad camp, this sort of neocon camp. I don't know if the Bushes are considered to be quite formally neocons or not, but the notion behind it, the notion that the United States is supposed to be, I'm using my own language, a great imperial power, that we are supposed to throw our weight around and influence the entire world, is a widely accepted notion. Now, the Democrats, the way they pitch wars to their followers is that these things are being done, U.S. weight is being thrown around the world for the good of everyone, that we aspire to advance human rights, women's rights, peace, and so forth. The Republicans are a little bit more raw in their appeal, that they're basically saying, well, why the hell shouldn't we? You know, we can do it. We've done it in the past. It works pretty well. It serves us. That's what we ought to do. And so their appeal is fundamentally different, but it's all sort of in that Project for a New American Century, the idea that the U.S. can and should project its military might throughout the world.
Multiple wars in multiple theaters. It's going to take a long time. This is written in 1998. It's going to take a long time unless we have a new Pearl Harbor. And then I look at some of the people, and the sponsors of that was Jinsa APAC. It's very Israel-centric, and I guess if anyone's getting the Israeli, but I know Trump is really pushing hard to be that guy, but I think Jeb and Hillary, that's why, again, I'm not saying it's fixed, but I'm just saying that really helps them significantly. Russ Baker with us. Who, what, why? They do all kinds of work over there, massive amounts of work. And I may not always agree with what you guys write over there, but I'm always intrigued by it. And that's a huge leg up. And that means a lot coming from me, if I do say so myself, because I know everybody. I read everybody. And I really love what you guys write. And I especially love what you guys did on the Boston Marathon bomber, Joker Sarnoff trial, which you found there to be a complete lack of evidence to convict him, right? I mean, how did it happen? He threw himself on the mercy of the court. This was unprecedented, actually. He still got the death penalty.
Yeah, there are a number of reasons that this Sarnoff trial and that whole Boston bombing case is so important. One is that it perfectly illustrates how the public can know almost nothing about a major event and harbor entirely incorrect notions of what actually happened, what is known, who did what, and so forth, how the media, and I would say the entire media, not just the mainstream or establishment media, but the right-wing media, the left-wing media, they are all in bed together, believe it or not, perpetuating these falsehoods. So that's one thing. The second thing is that the Boston Marathon bombing, related to what you just said about the Project for a New American Century and their recognition that America needs huge traumas, that Americans need to feel under attack before they are willing to say, okay, you can go ahead and launch a war, you can go ahead and project military might, you can use my tax dollars for that, I'll send my kids, etc. They have to have a sense that they're threatened. And this is what the Boston Marathon bombing represented. It was a it was 10 years after the 9/11, well, more than that, and of time when the public was becoming, let's say, complacent, was becoming increasingly discomfited about the violations of our civil liberties and our privacy and the strip searches and everything else, and starting to say, okay, enough is enough. That whole new complex added to Eisenhower's military-industrial complex, this homeland security complex, really kind of under threat, and the tremendous dollars offered to the corporate world through this gravy train. And then along comes this bombing, and we saw, and you can look at polls, we saw a sea change. As soon as this thing happened, everybody started saying, okay, okay, I'll back away from my positions. Maybe we do need all these measures. Maybe we do need to give these guys a blank check. Maybe we do need them to be reading our email. We'll let them do what they want to do because it's necessary for our safety. And that is the essence to me of the Boston bombing case.
Yeah.
Now, what you have to do next with that is you have to look at that and you have to say, well, what do we actually know about that case? And the answer is we know very, very little. The key things that we know, in a nutshell, we know that these two brothers were present in a crowd of many, many people, that they were wearing backpacks in a crowd of many, many people wearing backpacks. We know that they were seen walking on a video, and a few other things. And then almost everything else we don't know. So we actually never saw them planting a bomb, even though we think we did. This is a tremendous sleight of hand by the government with the complicity of the media, but we actually never saw them planting any
Unlike bombs. The bombing in Bangkok here a couple of days ago, we totally, closed-circuit TV just totally shows the guy doing that.
Yeah, sir. We don't see any evidence. There's the issue of the fact that the Fed said that the bombs, the backpacks that contained the bombs were black. That you can clearly see him with a primarily white backpack with some dark trim to it. The fact that they said that these two guys operated alone, yet the government also said that the bombs required some sophistication that they didn't think these kids had. That they supposedly did it in secret, and yet their domiciles were cleared as having not been a place that had any kind of traces of explosives. There are literally dozens, if not hundreds, of anomalies in this case, many of which, as you know, we have covered at whowhatwhy.org. We've published, I think, now close to 80 articles on this subject, which is about 80 more than almost any other news organization in terms of doing anything other than just repeating what the government's statements are. And you would think, after all of these decades of falsehoods and of trumped-up circumstances and wars under false pretenses and so on, that we would have learned something. We would have developed some kind of a backbone and some kind of a resistance to automatically accepting what powerful entities tell us that is self-serving and very, very dubious based on the evidence.
He just said trumped up.
Sorry.
No, but it's apropos. I thought the biggest thing about that is, and I want to add in one of the reasons I brought you in today, Russ, is that we've got some new stuff. One of them I just mentioned, the guy in Bangkok, CCTV, there he is. He doesn't have his backpack. He sits down. He looks very fishy. He leaves his backpack, and then he's running away. I mean, that if we had that with the Boston bombings, I would be one. Even if I thought that it could be Photoshopped or fixed or CGI'd, I'd still be convinced. But they still didn't even bother to show it. It's like the planes hitting the Pentagon on 9/11. They didn't even bother to show us that. It's just trust us, right? But the biggest thing for me, Russ, was the FBI BOLO. Here are the suspects. be on the lookout for them. And then we found out later they knew exactly who they were. Do you think there's any possibility that they had the pictures of Tamerlan and Jokhar Tsarnaev and didn't know who they were, and they put a big bolo out? Let's go help us find these people. They knew exactly.
Right. So the question would be, and you would want to ask the FBI agent in Boston who repeatedly interacted with Tamerlan Tsarnaev. I mean, he went repeatedly to his home and sat with him. Now, he was still working in the FBI at the time that this video was aired. You would think that when he watched the video, he would say, this guy looks familiar to me. The likelihood that he wouldn't look familiar to him when it had only been, a couple years earlier and repeated interactions, I would think would be small. And what I find interesting is, why is that question not raised? In other words, why is this FBI?
Exactly. Just ask the question.
Why ask him? Why is he not asked? Why was he not called to the trial or any kind of investigation and asked, did you not recognize him? By the way, don't they have any kind of photo? I thought photo recognition software was already around for a long time.
No, again, back to the CCTV and then higher extension of even satellite, complete facial recognition. Eventually, Uncle Ruslan came out and damned them in the public, trying them before anyone even saw evidence. And, of course, he was married to Graham Fuller's daughter, who was a top CIA, a very high-level CIA guy. And did Graham Fuller sit and watch his TV and goes, hey, I know that. I know those guys. Those are my nephews.
Well, there's a good point. Why didn't he say that? I hadn't thought of that one. Why didn't their uncle say, hey, that's my nephew? You're right. Well, why didn't anybody? Why did nobody say, I know that guy, he comes into my deli?
You have to look at all of your very intricate reporting because you ask a lot of the right questions. And unfortunately, all of that is usurped by it never happened. It was all a hoax. And I'm not even going to get to the stuff I really brought you on to say, but we have to get you to comment on this. There is a guy with a bullhorn going, this is just a drill. It's all a drill. There was a tweet. There's going to be a fake explosion in a drill and a phony triage with crisis actors at the Boston Marathon. Don't worry about it. It's nothing important, right? That certainly helps the people that say it never happened and no one got hurt and no one died and it was all fake. I'm not with them because I think that's the best cover you can ever have. We saw that on 9/11. We saw it in the Boston bombings, having a drill, and then it's very confusing for people because they think it's a drill and they don't know what it is. That's how you do it. I think that's the smoking gun, Russ, that you have the same kind of amalgam Virgo drills you had the morning of 9/11. You have the same drills that Peter Power admitted to in the London Tube bombings, doing the exact same thing that actually happened. That's extremely damning to me.
Yes, it is. And one of the things that we do at whowhatwhy.org is we look into all of these things. Unfortunately, as you know, we are a small nonprofit with a very, very lean team. Everything we do is dependent on public support. We have a lot of interest. We have a lot of visitors to our site. Very, very few of any of the people who come and eat all our stuff up and forward it to people ever give us a dime. And the problem is, all these things you're raising take time. We need to look into all of them. There are a zillion websites where people opine and they say, I know for a fact that this is what happened. But, of course, real journalism, that's not what you do.
No.
You say, I don't know for a fact what happened. Were there drills? Can we prove that there were drills? Can we
find
who the person with the bullhorn was? We have to go back and look at all the statements being made by every party. A lot of things turn out to be nuanced and more complicated. It's hard work, but it is the work that in the end will build consensus and credibility for a new understanding of these kinds of major events that change the trajectory of history and of our country.
My people are already doing tombstone memes for me because we're at the end of our Monday through Friday show, which is hard for me because I bring guys like you on all the time, and I need 5 days a week to do it because there's so many people to talk to. So really, I mean, big time. you guys please support me and keep me alive and don't bury me 6 feet under, but support Russ. And even if you find stuff that he says that you don't agree with, that doesn't matter. This is the guy that did the most work on the Boston bombing, agree with it or not. You could help. That's been helpful to you. I've used it, and I've used your stuff on the air. I guess I got to send you $10 or something, Russ, because I'm serious, man. I mean, I couldn't stand it if you guys went away. That would be just totally bum me out. Let me finish with this. FBI evidence proves innocence of accused Boston Marathon bomber Jokhar Tsarnaev. And that's by Paul Craig Roberts. Now, he writes this story. Paul Craig Roberts, I sent you the link to this a couple of days ago, Russ Baker. He was the Deputy Secretary of Treasury under Reagan. He's also a 9/11 truther, if you want it. That's pretty major. And he said he was contacted by attorney, and I know you've looked into this a little bit. He was contacted by John Remington Graham, a member in good standing of the bar in Minnesota.
I just want to cut that one short because these kinds of things come up all the time. There is a person, some sort of person, who says he's taking some sort of action to try to challenge the conventional story there. I don't know that there's anything more than that to it, so I really don't want to dwell on that too much, but I certainly agree that these questions need to be raised. I don't know how one would actually go about having an effective legal action of any kind to get these things forced out in the open. Probably our best hope is investigation and publicizing of what is found, because when enough of the public is up in arms about something, elected officials do typically respond. They feel pressured, and maybe there are hearings and other things, and that is when you start seeing action. I think that's our best hope with this case, is to continue to investigate it, do the hard work of digging up all these little threads and following them and seeing where they go, and we have no choice.
But you're a major player like me. I mean, we go on syndicated shows. We, you know what I mean? We have a lot of people we could reach. I don't understand. I mean, you're not going to not – would you like to contact Paul Craig Roberts and share what you have with him? Because
he knows what we do. I think I've received an email from him. So, I mean, we hear from lots of people. I think people communicate with each other. And as I say, I mean, we published 80 articles on this stuff, and they've been shared all over social media. If people don't know about it, I'm not sure what else we can do about that. Although I agree, everybody, speaking of a bullhorn, everybody needs a bigger bullhorn. We're working on trying to grow our organization, our social media, and our publicity capability. Yeah. We need to do lots more radio shows like this. And by the way, tip of my hat to you, Jack, for your willingness to engage with this kind of material and to do it repeatedly. There are not that many people like you, and I wish you all the best.
Well, thank you. He's just got such good name credentials, Paul Craig Roberts, and he's a guy that worked for the neocons, the crazies in the basement, and turned on them and has exposed them. And I think it would be very useful for the two of you to get together and have this discussion. And if this lawsuit goes through, because there is, amicus curiae. Right? I mean,
it's very difficult to do amicus suits. There are amicus suits from respected, you know, sort of semi-mainstream, the ACLU and what have you. They do them all the time. Most of them are thrown out just summarily. Yeah. It's very, very tough.
It's sober reporting from you. And that brings our people all back down to ground level where their feet are on the ground. I appreciate that, man. I mean, that's really important. Because I don't want to get too excited about anything. I've seen the smoking guns before. I'm past the point of being excited about things, Russ. It's just, unfortunately, I'm a little cynical. WhoWhatWhy.org, Russ Baker joins us on the program, one of our greatest correspondents, really, honestly. Anything you want to say on the way out before I get you out of here?
No, just the usual junk. At Who, What, Why on Twitter, Who, What, Why on Facebook. Please stay in touch. Send us your ideas. Love hearing from people.
All right, man. We'll talk to you soon, I hope. If God willing, if we all live through this, we'll all still be here. Russ Baker, it's the Jack Blood Show. Hour 3 starts now.